KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm John Sepulveda. Release the memo. That has been the rallying cry of Republicans looking to show that the FBI improperly surveilled the presidential campaign of Donald Trump. We've been talking about it all this week because the principal players in this story are Californians. Devin Nunes, Republican congressman from the Central Valley, and Adam Schiff, Democrat from Los Angeles. Nunes wrote the memo, and now Schiff says the memo delivered to the president has been changed from the one originally produced. This is a serious claim involving the Congress, and so we are turning to one of the most trustworthy reporters in Washington, D.C., Lisa Desjardins of the PBS NewsHour. Lisa, good morning.
Good morning, John.
So tell us about this claim Congressman Schiff is making. What's behind it?
There's so much behind this story, but to this specific claim, Congressman Schiff is saying that the memo which the White House has been given to decide whether they should clear or not, whether they should release it, that memo has changed in meaningful ways. It's been edited from the memo that House Intelligence was looking at. Now, that's really significant because essentially he's accusing Chairman Devin Nunes of shifting kind of the plot line and essentially misstating things to the White House itself in order to get something released. Now, Republicans say, Brad Weinstock, who's on the Intelligence Committee, said this morning that the changes were grammatical and that they were leaving out some titles so to protect people whose positions may be classified. He says that's all the changes are, but Mr. Schiff says that's not true. He said that these are actually significant changes that affect the substance of the memo.
And you are with the Republicans right now in that retreat in West Virginia. Are they talking at all about this? Do they look at this as a serious claim to the veracity and authenticity of this memo that's been given to the White House?
They're having a really tough time dealing with this, to be honest. I asked Kathy McMorris Rogers, who's in House leadership, at a press conference this morning, first of all, if she knew what the changes were, and second of all, if she thought Chairman Nunes was handling this whole situation correctly. And she actually dodged both of those questions. She said, I've seen the memo, and what I've seen greatly concerns me. I think it should be released. But to everything else, she just gave me a blanket answer. She said, I think you should ask the rest of those questions to Chairman Nunes. Senator John Thune, who was standing next to her, did not answer the questions at all and just didn't want to talk about it. I talked to him off camera later, and he said that he thinks that this should not be released now at all, that it should wait for members of the Senate to see it. He hasn't seen the memo, nor anyone on Senate Intelligence. He also thinks that if Republicans release this memo, they should also release the Democratic memo at the same time, which offers, I guess, counter facts to what Republicans are claiming. So there is great divide over this. There's a huge level of discomfort among Republicans on this issue right now.
Lisa Desjardins laying it out why this is such an important conversation. Lisa, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Big news yesterday from California company Facebook. Every day, people are using the social media site 50 million hours less per day. Also big news, the company paid a lot more money in taxes because of the recent GOP tax reform bill. To help us make sense of all this wah news from Facebook is Slate's April Glazer. She writes about technology. She joins us from Washington, D.C. Good morning, April.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Tell us why people are using Facebook less.
You know, Zuckerberg says that it's because there are fewer viral videos, right? And the idea with this is that with less time spent on the app, the kind of time that people do spend will be higher quality. Now, you know, this could affect their revenue, right? Because Facebook makes more money the more ads it sells. But another outcome could be that if people see fewer ads, the demand will go up and the company can raise its prices.
We also saw that there was some talk that this might be tied to the measures Facebook took to prevent countries like Russia infiltrating their site with propaganda. Are we seeing any evidence of this, that those are somehow related?
It's not clear that that's actually happening yet. You know, Facebook did make some announcements, you know, this year already that they are changing their news feed, you know, for instance, taking some of the news out of the feed and kind of increasing the type of stuff that you see related to your friends and family. And that's probably not hitting this yet. This is probably has to do with the reduction in viral videos, like Zuckerberg said on the call on Wednesday.
All right. And that call seemed to steady investors as We saw Facebook's stock rebound after that call. And one last thing, April, is that this news that Facebook paid more in taxes because of this tax reform law that was recently passed by Congress and President Trump, does this mean that they're going to be taking a hit long term on taxes?
No, they did take a slight hit because of the new tax bill, but that was temporary. It brought their earnings down about 70 cents a share this time. But, you know, Facebook also reported on Wednesday that its user base in the U.S. and Canada shrunk for the first time ever in its last quarter. It's now at 184 million daily users, you know, which is down from 185 million the previous quarter in 2017.
April Glazer of Slate. April, thank you.
Thank you so much, Doug.
Thousands of people with marijuana convictions in San Francisco that go as far back as 1975 will soon have their records wiped. San Francisco's district attorney's office is applying Proposition 64 retroactively and will immediately dismiss and seal records for more than 3,000 misdemeanor convictions and review nearly 5,000 felony convictions. DA George Gascon says these old marijuana convictions have hurt people's chances for employment or housing.
Quite frankly, we want to impact public policy across the state. We're hoping that what we're doing here not only will benefit San Francisco, but that other elected officials around the state will say this is the right thing to do.
San Diego officials announced they were moving in a similar direction to the San Francisco district attorney. California's frozen reservoir, the Sierra snowpack, is suffering once again. In fact, there's been so little snowfall this winter that people are starting to drop the D word, concerned that the state might be headed back into drought. We have two reporters who have been tracking this, beginning with KQED's Craig Miller.
When official numbers come in later today for the monthly Sierra snow survey, they're likely to show water content of the snow, which is really what they're measuring, at less than a third of the long-term average for February 1st. That's flirting with levels we saw at the depths of the drought. And it's troubling because two of the state's three biggest months for precipitation have already passed. And right now, February isn't looking real promising. We've got a persistent high-pressure system parked along the coast, diverting storms up around the state. Prospects for some mountain snow are especially grim in Southern California, where Molly Peterson has been watching both the skies and the thermometer.
The pink trumpet flowers are pushing up at the Los Angeles County Arboretum, and temperature records are falling around Southern California. The Orange County city of Lake Forest, it hit 93 degrees on Monday, the hottest in the nation. Yes, it's beach weather, but the windy conditions underway now are also the sort that fueled December's fires. The U.S. Drought Monitor rates Central and Southern California as exceptionally dry. LA's rainfall is about a quarter of what's normal from October till now, so it's really unlikely that the region's going to catch up. Southern Californians are hoping for a wet February and March, though, to cut down the risk of another drought. For the California Report, I'm Molly Peterson in Los Angeles.
Civil rights advocates filed suit in federal court this week to try and block Orange County officials from moving homeless people away from the Santa Ana Riverbank. KPCC's Jill Replegal has been covering the issue.
So the lawsuit argues that the county and the cities have not made a significant effort to come up with alternatives to people living in this area. There's not enough shelter beds. There's not enough affordable housing. You know, the cities and the counties have done outreach work to people living in the riverbed. They've stepped up the service providers that they have going around to tents and trying to help people either get to a shelter or get housing. It's a huge burden for people to move around. There are people who have been living there for 4, 5, 6 years. I mean, there are some really long-term residents of this area. And I interviewed one of the plaintiffs who's a veteran who's lived there for about a year. This is the third time he's moved since he became homeless. And, you know, he says it's really hard to get back on your feet when you don't have a stable place to be, to sleep.
That was KPCC's Jill Replegal. An estimated 500 to 1,000 people live along the Santa Ana River without sanitation or trash collection. A judge has yet to consider the lawsuit. Moving on now, what if you took a police scanner, Twitter, and a neighborhood watch group and combine them on your smartphone? That's a bit like what the app called Citizen is doing with a new crime tracker. KQED's Peter Arcuni checked it out.
I open the app and up comes a map. In the center is me, a blue dot, surrounded by red dots, incidents. I tap them and find three men fleeing in stolen Chevy, coyote lunging at children, dogs, naked man near garbage can. Just a few of the emergencies unfolding around me. Another tap reveals a timeline with updates. Police at scene. Suspect in orange hoodie. The app can also ping me whenever an incident occurs within a quarter mile of my location.
It's a hyper-local, real-time source of everything that could affect your safety happening at that moment.
Leah Arts is head of operations for Citizen App, which is now active in New York and San Francisco.
So when you see sirens racing by or you hear a helicopter flying by overhead, you'll get an alert. And from there, you can make a safe and informed decision about where you move.
Trained technicians listen to emergency dispatch calls, the kind you could hear with a police scanner, and translate them in plain English, then map them.
Instead of getting some police jargon and radio codes that probably don't make sense to you, we're giving you the information the way that you understand it the best.
Art says the idea is to give people the public safety information that's out there, but for the most part, inaccessible.
Something that would affect the route you took to work or where you sent your kids at night wasn't public knowledge to you.
App users at the scene of an emergency can also upload their own photos, videos, or comments.
The ultimate goal is to increase transparency.
Tech bloggers have raised concerns about the possible spread of misinformation or the privacy of victims. And some critics worry the app could encourage people to flock to the scene of an emergency, potentially creating problems for police and other first responders. Some of the backlash goes back to the app's original name, Vigilante, and a current web ad that simulates users helping police track a kidnapper.
What will be possible when technology unites the forces of good?
SFPD spokesman Robert Rueca says one concern is that information coming through police scanners is by nature incomplete and subject to change.
There's a lot of times that calls are put out there and it may appear to be one thing, but it ends up being something completely different.
Rueca cautions people against relying on the app for decisions about their safety. There's nothing legally stopping Citizen App from sharing emergency communications or allowing users to post videos from public places, says James Wheaton, a professor of journalism law at UC Berkeley. But he says a host of legal issues could arise if users take the app as a license to interfere with crime scenes.
That would illustrate the worst possible outcome here, which is you take a bunch of untrained people and have them start acting as not just the eyes and ears, but suddenly the arm itself of the police.
Art says Citizen has no official relationship with police departments, but that the company welcomes their input. The Citizen app is free and has 250,000 active users across New York and San Francisco, with plans to expand to other major cities sometime this year. For the California Report, I'm Peter Arcuni.
In California, 80,000 immigrants have temporary protected status, or TPS. Most of those immigrants are employed. The Trump administration is ending the TPS protections for many, and that's causing uncertainty, not only for these workers, but their employers as well. KQED's Farida Javalo Romero reports.
Close to 100 people pack a legal consultation event in San Francisco. A TPS holder from Honduras speaks up, Mariano Guzman. Guzman says his bosses noticed that his work permit expired, and he lost his job as a truck driver for a waste management company. He worries he won't be able to pay his mortgage and support his family. As the Trump administration winds down TPS for people from El Salvador, Haiti, and Nicaragua, immigration attorneys worry more workers could be let go, even those who still have TPS. Cyrus Mehta is an attorney who advises corporations on immigration law.
When the administration is trying to terminate programs that are inherently temporary and they get extended, it could cause more confusion for employers.
In fact, Hondurans like Guzman still have protected status. The Department of Homeland Security automatically extended work permits for those who re-register for the program. But the new work permit cards can take months to arrive in the mail. This can usually be clarified with a letter to employers, says Ramon Cardona. He directs Centro Latino Cuscatlán, offering immigration services to hundreds of TPS holders in the Bay Area.
We highlight the part that, you know, the government is saying this is good for 6 more months, and we tell them, give them that, and that should be enough. And in most cases, that's enough.
That's how Mariano Guzman got his job back. Eric Potashner is vice president of Recology, the trash company where Guzman works.
For us, this is a constant learning experience on understanding and keeping track of deadlines, understanding when things are going to get reauthorized. So there are a lot more moving parts than a company like ours has ever had to deal with before.
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is urging the Trump administration to keep TPS for Honduras and other nations, saying businesses in the U.S. need a stable workforce. And Mariano Guzman? He's traveling to Washington, D.C. with other immigrants this weekend to try to convince GOP lawmakers to let people with TPS get on a path to citizenship. For the California Report, I'm Farida Jabala Romero.
We're going to end with a story on immigration. In Boulevard, California, along the border with Mexico, almost 80 people were found inside a truck, including five children. The truck was painted to resemble a postal vehicle, but it had no tags or a license plate. Officers pulled it over after it was weaving, and according to the criminal complaint, the inside of the truck's cargo was so hot that the officer could smell body odor coming from the trailer. The man arrested for driving the truck told officers he was a professional smuggler, paid $100 per person. And that's the California Report for Thursday, February 1st, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm John Sepulveda.